It's the show for UFC fans across the globe. This is Ultimate Fighting Weekly with Chris Toplak. 3, 2, 1.
This is Ultimate Fighting Weekly, episode 100. My name is Chris Toplak. Thanks for joining me. What a momentous occasion! Unfortunately, we don't have Brock Lesnar, George St. Pierre, or the MGM Grand as a backdrop, but hey, it's okay. All you need to celebrate this occasion is some good food. If you know me, that's what matters most. On this edition of the program, we have a lot to get to. UFC Boston and Stockholm recaps, John Jones apologizes, fight announcements, UFC 183 predictions taking place in just less than a week. Cannot wait. And the winner of a Mission Belt will be revealed. I hope you are on missionbelt.com, possibly choosing the right belt for you. Easy to use, stylish, and a wide selection. And not just of traditional belts, but also NCAA belts. Got some NBA belts on there as well, too, so hope you were scouting them out. The winner will be revealed a little bit later on in the program. I like the winning answer, so we'll get to that shortly. But let's talk about UFC Fight Night Boston. It took place last Sunday, and episode 99 was basically kind of a shoo-in for the program. It was a nice little lead-in, if you will. Overall, a pretty entertaining event. Love the Boston crowd. I do have some regrets by not attending that show. I mentioned it on the previous edition of the program. I was offered tickets with a substantial discount to TD Garden in Boston. I was forced to turn them down. Timing was the major issue. Could not make it. And I missed one hell of an event from top to bottom. I really enjoyed it. Although, some controversial decisions as well, too. The judges were certainly not on point in Boston. And they say Vegas is bad. Think again. Well, let's discuss the main card because that was the main attraction after all. And it was tough on a Sunday night to stay up past midnight watching this. Again, I'm not complaining, but nevertheless. So it was the debut of the UFC on TSN and the Great White North. They were already off to a rocky start. They aired a promo for UFC 182 on multiple occasions during the break. I'm thinking, hey, yeah, welcome to the new home. Can't get something right. I don't even get the prelims up here. Instead of airing them on TSN, they actually air them on the Fight Network. Very clunky. Let's hope they get their scheduling in order sometime soon. So I was not overly impressed with Park, and that's Norman Park, on that evening. He did lose to Gleison Tibau via split decision. Gleison Tibau is one of the winningest fighters in UFC history. And the man is nowhere close to a title opportunity. I just simply do not understand it. But nevertheless, he's still that perennial gatekeeper. I am sure that you saw the photos floating around the internet of Uriah Hall's cut on Ron Stallings. It was nasty. I gave my wife nightmares by showing her that photo. That gash was huge. Some felt that doctor stoppage was controversial. It's nowhere near controversial, especially when you saw the size of that cut. Not only how deep it was, but how wide it was too. When Uriah Hall connects, he does some definite damage. Huge win for Uriah Hall. Ron Stallings loses nothing in this bout, though. Took the fight on, what, a week and a half's notice? I'm sure they'll let him fight another day, just to reward him for stepping up at the last minute. The co-main event of the evening was rather disappointing. Donald Cerrone was unable to push the pace and pressure Ben Henderson. And while it was far from lackluster, it more or less resembled a glorified sparring match than an actual fight. I scored a 29-28 for Ben Henderson, as did the majority of the MMA community. But in the end, it was actually Donald Cowboy Cerrone winning via unanimous decision, 29-28, all over the judges' scorecards. Made very little sense. All you need to do is rewatch the reaction of Donald Cerrone, who looked defeated, and Ben Henderson, who was just awaiting his arm to get raised. When it wasn't, he had this pure look of shock. What? Are you kidding me? Again? Come on now. Feel bad for the guy. Many feel it was a premature stoppage in the fight against Rafael dos Anjos. And then this. Ben Henderson cannot catch a break. As for Donald Cowboy Cerrone, make that 7 in a row. Strong rumors of the Cowboy and Khabib Nurmagomedov. I would love to see it if, knock on wood, Khabib can finally stay healthy for a change. And also, before you call this a huge robbery, may I remind you of Diego Sanchez versus Ross Pearson? I mean, of course, Benson Henderson deserved this win, but that was a huge robbery. On to the main event. The UFC promoted Conor McGregor more than the majority of their champions, so they literally placed all their chips on the table. It was basically target practice for Conor McGregor. He made easy work of Dennis Siver, who put up very little of a fight. Conor McGregor emerged victorious via TKO. Now, even more exciting than the fight itself was what transpired following the victory. He hopped the cage, confronted Jose Aldo. Conor McGregor literally screaming in front of Jose's face. Aldo smiling ear to ear like a comic book supervillain. It was literally like a scene out of a Marvel movie. I'm telling you, I do believe that Conor McGregor will bring out the best in Jose Aldo. He's been somewhat complacent recently up until that Chad Mendes fight. Coasting, if you will, on his pure talent. But Conor McGregor will push him to places he's never been pushed before. And Jose Aldo will retaliate, and he's a monster. So while, of course, the hype is behind Conor McGregor, never count out one of the pound-for-pound best on planet Earth, Jose Aldo, in those frightening leg kicks. If he starts landing those at will, at ease, it's going to be a long, painful night for Conor McGregor, who will never quite walk the same again. Moving on to the event that took place last night. Hey, reportedly, IKEA constructed the octagon in Sweden. No one understood the instructions. It took 3 days to complete using one tool that they almost lost. Imagine that. This was the second stadium venue to host a UFC event. That was, of course, after UFC 129, which I was present for. Now, I have to tell you, that was not exactly fan-friendly. I had great seats. I paid some big money to sit where I sat. And the view was awful. So this made more sense. It appeared as though most fans in attendance had a better view of the fights that were transpiring, as opposed to the Rogers Center, which I hope they never visit again. Even Cowboys Stadium, which they've renamed, what, AT&T Stadium, would be a more adequate venue than Rogers Center again. No offense to our fans in the Great White North, it's just a matter of fact. Sweden easily has some of the most passionate MMA fans on the planet. Consider this, they were willing to attend a main card this started at 2 a.m. Would you be willing to do the same? Damn, I have to question that. I'm not sure I would. If I'm attending a live event, let's say at the ACC or somewhere nearby, and the main card starts at 2 a.m., might not end until 4, 4:30, maybe even 5. Do I really want to risk it? Do I really want to throw off my sleep schedule that much to watch MMA? Chances are, yes. But man, what a deflated ride home after that main event, which we'll get to in a second. So Rogan was speaking on Akira Korasani. He's got a really good chin, and I could not disagree with Joe Rogan more. And I tweeted this, that's a tough sell, given that he dropped 2 in a row via TKO, also had that illegal knee that he had to withstand as well, too, prior to that. And the worst things happen in threes. A huge knockout from Sam Cecilia. He generates a ton of power at 145. He proved it last night. Akira Korasani loses, basically, in his home country. That was the first knock. Fans were very quiet after that. But Sam Cecilia, he's a man that's frightening. He will continuously pressure you, and he'll make it ugly. Moving ahead, it was Phil Davis taking on Ryan Bader. Honestly, this was a fight I did not have high hopes for. Phil Davis ended up losing the fight via split decision. Oddly enough, probably more people had it scored for Phil Davis. Most fans and journalists alike just wanted to move on from it completely. Very slow-paced, sloppy. Neither man earned any additional fans after this bout. Can't tell me anybody was sitting on the couch thinking, wow, that Ryan Bader is an absolute specimen. He's a wonderful athlete, and I'm going to start cheering him no matter where he goes. Fortunately, did more harm than good. Here's something I fail to understand. Phil Davis is considered an elite light heavyweight, but he still appears to be incredibly uncomfortable as a striker. His stand-up game is clunky, it's awkward, he throws half-hearted punches that resemble slaps. And yet, he claims to be this top-notch athlete. While that might be true, he's certainly not a complete one. Both Phil Davis and Ryan Bader put forth an underwhelming performance. Sadly, as I mentioned, this was almost expected. And with so much on the line, I cannot comprehend why both fighters were so tentative, they basically blew it. And like I mentioned, Phil's failure to evolve has been his downfall. His stand-up game is at an embarrassing stalemate, if you will. As for Bader, he looks just fine until he gets hit. And that is a man who cannot get past the elite of the light heavyweight division. He's been a mainstay in the top 10. But how long until he goes on a losing skid, drops out of it completely? On to the co-main event. Worth noting, Gegard Mousasi and Rory MacDonald would have the most epic stare down of all time. The first one to show emotion loses. Gegard Mousasi in his excited face. Does it look any different from Gegard Mousasi in his serious face? Dan Henderson entered the octagon to quite a bit of fanfare, which warms my heart. He's one of the greatest of all time. Definitely a top 10, not even up for debate. Based on all of his accomplishments, that seems like a fitting title. One of the greatest of all time. Well, he went in there against the dangerous Gegard Mousasi. That was actually Dan dropping down to middleweight. Also, Gegard doing the same. So kind of a fresh start in both of their minds. It ended early. Hendo seemed visibly stunned by a punch to the temple. He went down. Was it stopped prematurely? That's the big question. Possibly. But do you really have a big issue with the stoppage? I don't. Because Mousasi pounced on him immediately. He was on top of him. He was ready to rain down more strikes. So it was inevitable that Hendo would have been finished. It was painful to watch. Mousasi, very gracious in victory. Hendo, as always, very admirable in defeat. I've got to tell you, though, anytime Dan Henderson loses, a piece of my heart breaks. I can't root against the guy. He mentioned post-fight, he still absolutely wants to fight. Do you want to see it? I would love your opinion, at Chris Toplak. Would you still love to see Dan Henderson compete inside the octagon? I'm not sure I do. Maybe one more. Right off into the sunset like Duke. Anthony Johnson versus the hometown boy, Alexander Gustafsson. Alexander Gustafsson was actually a 3-1 favorite when it came to the betting odds. I thought a little bit high, even though I did choose him to emerge victorious. Well, it ended in the first round. Anthony Johnson caught him. He got poked. They restarted it. Caught him within about 6 seconds of that. Took him down. It was dragged out because Gustafsson was half-heartedly defending himself on the ground. Johnson was landing shots at ease. Finally, they waved it off. Anthony Johnson via TKO. He may have just become the most feared man on the entire UFC roster with that victory. He's freakishly powerful. Is John Jones in legitimate trouble? Yes. Yes, he is. If Johnson connects, you're going to sleep. You're falling on your butt. Heartbreaking image of Alexander Gustafsson in his hometown, basically. 30,000 people. 30,000 of his fellow countrymen. Completely dead silent. As he had to cover his face with his shirt, obviously crying. I felt for him. Even Anthony Johnson felt for him too, thinking, I didn't want to come in and be the spoiler. I wanted to win. I wanted to compete for a title. I didn't want to crush the guy in his hometown, his home country. Got to feel for him. But here's the thing. Alexander Gustafsson is not even 30 years old. He's 28, continues to evolve. He will get better. He will rebound from this, and he still is an elite light heavyweight. Perhaps Gustafsson and Daniel Cormier is a fight that most would like to see. Sign me up. Anthony Rumble Johnson actually had a message for John Jones. Keep your hands up. One of the few things that John fails to do. Puts his hands down quite a bit. Distracts you with his fingers. Doesn't always poke you in the face. But if Johnson connects, we might have a new light heavyweight champion. So now we've got Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor. And then we've got John Jones and Anthony Johnson. 2015 could be one of the better years in UFC history. What do you think of the events? How would you grade them? Tweet me, Facebook me, let me know at Chris Toplak. Let's get to the weekly recap.
The UFC Weekly Recap.
On Monday night, John Jones' interview on Fox Sports 1 was aired. He addressed the failed drug test from December for the very first time. I'm not here to make excuses for what happened. I did it basically at a party, and I think a coward would sit here and try to come up with this elaborate reason or to try to blame something. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to blame my friends. I'm not going to blame pressure or stress. I'm not going to blame anything I messed up. I can't call it a mistake because I consciously did it. John also claims he dabbled with cocaine in college, but also claimed his use was never frequent. He also responded to the one-day stint in rehab rumors, basically became a punchline all over social media. I stayed there the next day, the whole day, with a bunch of different addicts. The counselor came to me at the house. He sat down and said, hey, John, I really believe that you made a big mistake, and you don't need to live here with us full time. But I will continue to drug test you and come by your house twice a week or however often. He also left a message to the fans. My message to the fans is that I'm sorry, that I'm really sorry for maybe betraying their belief or letting them down. I definitely have let myself down, my family, my team, the UFC, my fans. The interview went about as expected. Most of us made the assumption it was likely at a party. Proved to be accurate. And here's the thing. John is fully aware of the fact that he regrets his decision. He made a mistake. But he was so foolish to even put himself in such a predicament, such a situation where he knew that something negative could occur. I'm not saying that John can never have fun, can never party, but he was 1 month out from the biggest title defense of his career, and he was present at a party with drugs and alcohol. How he decided this was logical is beyond me. And I know many can kind of laugh it off and say it's not a big deal, but his management really needs to get a hold of him. Moving ahead, some fight announcements and an event announced. UFC Fight Night, April the 4th from Fairfax, Virginia. An incredible main event. Chad Money Mendez taking on Ricardo Lamas. Two featherweights who fell short on their journey to become the featherweight champion. Jose Aldo took them both out. A loss really puts them at the back of the line. A win still provides them with a glimmer of hope that maybe, just maybe, they will fight Jose Aldo again in the future. Jorge Masvidal will be taking on Benson Henderson, fresh off his loss, controversial one at that, to Donald Cowboy Cerrone just a couple of weeks ago. He replaced Bobby Green in the co-main event. It was actually Bobby Green originally announced. Ben Henderson said, hey, you know what? I'm pulling a Cowboy. Throw me in there. Dustin Poirier will be at the event. Michael Chiesa taking on Mitch Clark. Also added Liz Carmouche versus Lauren Murphy. So some great women's bantamweight action in there as well. Do you agree or disagree with this decision? Mirko Krokop has officially returned to the UFC. Here's a timeline. He last fought for the UFC in October of 2011. He was stopped by Roy Nelson. Third round TKO. Pretty brutal fight, by the way. Since then, he thought about retirement, went against it, went 3-1 outside of the UFC, and now UFC Fight Night 64 heads over to Poland. Intriguing matchup, Mirko Krokop looking for revenge over Gabriel Gonzaga, one of the greatest knockouts in UFC history. Fresh over from Pride, the UFC was basically viewing Krokop as a future heavyweight title contender. Got past Eddie Sanchez via TKO. And this was a test as well too, Gabriel Gonzaga. Gabriel Gonzaga knocked him out with a huge head kick. And that basically derailed all momentum, all hype. Put him right at the back of the line. So with Mirko Krokop coming back, I was thinking, hey, are they attempting to align him with Brock Lesnar? Two heavyweights with name value going toe-to-toe? If he gets past Gabriel Gonzaga, I don't see why not. Makes sense. Let's move ahead to the Mission Belt giveaway. Again, it was very easy. Why do you deserve a Mission Belt? That was the question. Received many responses via Twitter, also many on Facebook in the Fightbook MMA group, also UFC Fight Club group as well. Great supporters of the program, by the way. Keep tuning in. A few of the notable responses, because I'm the number one contender, because I'm a badass. Here's one from our friends at MMA Made. Mighty. Debo, I want to enter TaylorMade MMA for a Mission Belt. He really deserves one because that's the only belt he can get this season. Wow. They compete for belts each season on the program. Mighty currently the champion, if you will. Here's another one. I like this one. Seems like Chris Toplak humor here. I always talk about my gazelle legs, how they're not proportionate to my body because I don't wear belts. And I own very few. would be nice to own a nice belt for once. Another, because I don't want my pants to fall off. Hey, that's my main rationale behind wearing a belt. I don't want my pants to fall off. Don't want to be thrown in jail for indecent exposure. Listen, officer, it was my belt. I promise you. I probably shouldn't have been walking through Freshco continuing to pick up my groceries with no pants on, but hey, I was in a rush. Final contender, I lost my Batman belt buckle and desperately need a replacement. I think Batman belt buckle, I think Howard from the Big Bang Theory. The winner of the mission belt. Your choice, your style, coming directly to you. Mozzie Moss. I'm going on a lot of job interviews these next few weeks, and this will sharpen up my image and could help me land that awesome job. Yeah, here on Ultimate Footing Weekly, we make dreams come true. Mozzie Moss, that belt is yours. I will be in touch. We will send that to you. You can choose out any style you like. For those who did not win a mission belt, there will be more in the future. They've been a very supportive sponsor of Ultimate Footing Weekly. Stop by missionbelt.com today to check out their inventory. Always updating. I've got four, likely a fifth on the way. I just can't stay away. Once again, congrats to Mozzie Moss for your brand spanking new mission belt. Let's hope you land that new job.
Predictions.
UFC 183 takes place this coming Saturday, January the 31st, from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Oddly enough, my wife and I are planning on staying at the MGM this April for our annual Sin City visit. I attempt to make it there as often as possible. It is my home away from home. From top to bottom, and I've thoroughly gone through this, pretty impressive card. Even the prelim card. In the flyweight division, you have Ian McCall taking on John Lineker. That bout was originally scheduled for UFC Fight Night in Brazil. McCall was forced to withdraw the day of the event with a blood infection. Very unfortunate, so this fight has been long overdue. You have Ed Herman taking on Derek Brunson, headlining the prelim card in the women's bantamweight division, two former title contenders, Miesha Tate and Sarah McMahon. One will remain relevant, the other forced to go to the back of the line. Let's get to the main card. Kicking it off in the welterweight division, Jordan Meehan taking on Thiago Alves. Meehan is merely 25 years old, and this will be his 39th professional fight. It's insane. It's not very often that we can refer to a 25-year-old as a legitimate veteran of the sport. It's a rarity. Oddly enough, I believe he still hasn't reached his full potential either. He's 3-1 in the UFC, and there's no shame in losing to Matthew Mortal Brown, especially during that tear where he was going through basically every welterweight he got his hands on. It was actually a closely contested bout, and Meehan had his moments where he was getting the upper hand for the majority of the fight as well. So from his stand-up game to his Brazilian jiu-jitsu, he's extremely well-rounded. Looked incredible in his TKO victory over the very durable Mike Pyle. You want to talk about another veteran? There's a guy right there. Thiago Alves, 7 years ago, was once considered a legitimate threat for the welterweight championship. This was, of course, prior to St. Pierre's systematic, dominant performance at UFC 100. Probably left Alves feeling very deflated. Now, Alves has lost the majority of his momentum since those days. He's gone 2-2 in his past four, and has basically only competed twice in the past 2 years. Inactivity can be your downfall. Ask Cain Velasquez, right? Fortunately, thanks to Mike Dolce, he no longer struggles with making weight. So there's one less problem. And he actually appears to be more powerful with the extra assistance. So while his returned victory over Seth Pazinski was certainly impressive, I still have questions about his cardio and also his takedown defense as well. Many have noted in the past he had great takedown defense, but John Fitch and George St. Pierre have basically said, I disagree with you. So I have Jordan Meehan winning via unanimous decision, basically because his skill set is much more diverse. In the middleweight division, Talis Lytus taking on Tim Boach. Talis Laettis is a former middleweight title contender, but it was clear he was not quite ready for that opportunity. A lackluster performance against Anderson Silva, followed by a loss, saw him cut from the promotion, kind of unexpectedly. Now, he rightfully earned his way back to the UFC. He's gone 4-0 with two finishes in a row over durable opposition. His most recent victory over Francis Carmont. Striking basically has improved leaps and bounds from his first UFC tenure. That's the thing that jumps off the sheet from me. And couple that with the fact that he's still one of the most dangerous on the ground, he's very difficult to defeat and knock off. Tim Boach has gone 2-3 in his last five. You could argue that it's actually 1-4 with a controversial win over, I believe, Evan Dunham. Or perhaps that was CB Dolloway. Nevertheless, he has dropped out of the top 10 rankings. I don't know if he'll ever make it back. His comeback victory over Brad Tavares saw him live to fight another day. I believe a loss would have likely seen him looking for a new promotion to compete in. That's one of his biggest strengths, is his toughness. Whether he's rocked or deathly tired, he will still try to pressure you. And we've seen him deathly tired on multiple occasions. That being said, Laettis is on a tear recently. I don't see it ending anytime soon. Talis Laettis via unanimous decision. In the lightweight division, Joe Lauzon taking on Al Iaquinta. Joe Lauzon is undoubtedly one of the most exciting fighters to ever compete inside the octagon. Over the years, he's become an instant fan favorite. Basically, it's because of that never-say-die attitude, and of course, coupled out with the 13 post-fight bonuses, which still stands as a record. Lauzon has earned some big victories inside the octagon, but he has fallen into that dreaded gatekeeper status. He just can't manage to get past the elite of the division, but still manages to string together victories. So still has a place in the UFC. He's won two in a row. He could potentially earn him another shot at the top 10, maybe a top 10 opponent for that matter. Now, despite a few losses under the UFC banner, many still consider Al Iaquinta to be a future contender at lightweight. His recent finish over the durable Ross Pearson opened a lot of eyes, including mine, to be completely honest with you. It's not as though I wrote him off, but I did not expect him to get past Ross Pearson. So he's still evolving as a fighter, and this could be an excellent addition to his resume as he looks to enter the top 15. I do have Al Iaquinta via TKO. In the welterweight division, the co-main event of the evening, Tyrone Woodley taking on Kelvin Gastelum. I've been a vocal critic of Woodley over the past couple of years, and the main reason surrounds this supposed elite status. I simply don't believe he's there quite yet. Will he get there? Perhaps. But that loss to Jake Shields and that loss to Roy McDonald basically proves that he still needs to work on his cardio, even some of his takedown defense, too. Now, he's definitely a top 10 welterweight. Don't get me wrong. But I don't believe that he should be ranked in the top 5. I mean, that victory over Carlos Condon, I'd like to see that rematch. But I do feel a motivated Tyrone Woodley is extremely dangerous. I would imagine he's hoping to derail the hype of Kelvin Gastelum. Now, speaking of Gastelum, he defeated Jiraiya Hall to win the Ultimate Fighter Season 17. Basically, he's continued his undefeated streak going 5-0 inside the octagon. And basically, the most frightening aspect is the fact that he's only 23 years old. God, the guy hasn't even scratched the surface yet. Many have been alluding to that. So a win over Woodley would basically launch him into the top 5 rankings. It would earn him a big matchup against an elite welterweight. And with the UFC constantly seeking new stars, this could be his breakout year. Woodley is an intimidating bull who will look to finish the fight early, but I do believe Kelvin's patience and technique should pay off in the long run. So I have Kelvin Gastelum via unanimous decision. Let the taunting begin. It is the main event in the middleweight division. Anderson Silva taking on Nick Diaz, the Stockton bad boy. I truthfully believe the UFC took away from this fight when Dana announced, hey, Silva or Diaz could actually achieve title shots with a victory. Nobody cares. We just want to see a fun fight. Both are not deserving of a title opportunity, and let's embrace this fight for what it truly represents. Fun. Amusement. Arguably, the UFC's greatest fighter of all time squares off against one of MMA's most polarizing and colorful characters, nothing more needs to be said. That's how you hype the fight. Silva is coming off two losses in a row to Chris Weidman, and while his previous loss ended up being, of course, a freak accident, it's clear that his time in the sun is over. He's undoubtedly the greatest champion in UFC history, but it's time for him to move aside and allow new fighters to compete for the crown, such as Jacare, or Luke Rockhold, so on and so forth. The king was dethroned. Time to move on. Now, Anderson Silva is still one of the most dangerous strikers in the game today and has many tools at his disposal that should worry Nick Diaz. As for Nick Diaz, he's proven that while he's extremely talented, and I might catch some heat for this, but it's a fact, he's clearly not an elite fighter in the UFC. I mean, he's 7-6 inside the octagon, so that should be supportive of the claim that he's not quite elite. I mean, he's really good. But is he a top contender? I don't believe so. His cardio, crisp boxing, and solid chin, though, still makes him a formidable opponent who is damn near impossible to finish. Can Anderson Silva be really that first guy? I do believe that Anderson Silva will be the one fighter to accomplish this feat. Anderson Silva via TKO. Do you agree with the predictions or not? Let me know at Chris Toplak on Twitter or even on Facebook as well, too. This has been episode 100, a momentous occasion. So proud that we made it here. Some quick insight and some thanks. I left the world of radio broadcasting in 2011. It was undoubtedly one of the most difficult decisions I've ever made. I accomplished basically a lot at a young age. I was hosting a morning radio show, entertained thousands of listeners on a daily basis. I genuinely loved it, and that was my goal ever since I was 9 years old. There were opportunities to continue, but it would have required me to move many hours away. If I decided to do so, I likely would have never married my wife or started a new career in the city I was born and raised in. There was a void that was left and desperately needed to be filled that has nothing to do with ego. I just missed it. So I created the show 2 years ago for a few reasons. First, I greatly missed having the opportunity to engage thousands of listeners on a weekly basis. And most importantly, I love MMA. It was the perfect marriage, and I see no end in sight. So your support and continued listenership is incredibly humbling. Thank you for taking the time out of your life to tune in. Let's hope that never changes. Special thanks also goes out to past sponsors, including our current one, Mission Belt, and MMASucka.com for being the new home of Ultimate Fighting Weekly. And if you would be so kind, you know I need to ask it. If you could, share it, like it, retweet it, tell your friends, tell your family, tell UFC fans across the world to tune in. I would greatly appreciate it. And until next Sunday, take care and enjoy your UFC action.
This has been Ultimate Fighting Weekly with Chris Toplak. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Toplak or at ChrisToplak.com and visit MMASucka.com for a new show every Sunday.